Welcome to Reality Student Ministries, and thanks for listening. We are all about learning how to live this life to the fullest, getting the most out of every day. For information on upcoming events, sermon series, and ways to connect, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com, as well as like our Facebook page at RSM. Now here's today's message.
The world is broken. And people are hurting. They're carrying years of past regrets, failures, and pain. They're lost in a fog of lies, disillusioned by what the world says is happiness. They've fallen into the trap of sin, desperate to become the good person they want to be, but powerless to change. Burdened, angry, and helpless. But when we, the church, the hands of Jesus, reach out to the heavy-hearted, when we, the feet of Jesus, run to the fallen, when we remove our insecurities and let the light of Christ shine bright in the darkness, God moves. God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and love. And when we truly believe this, freedom is found. Minds are renewed, and hearts are healed. God moves when we step out in faith, when we let go of our time, our talents, and our treasure. God moves when we, the church, go all in.
All right, so last week we continued in this whole series of the new normal, and we've been talking about this for a while, but last week we started talking about this whole idea that it's no longer about just identifying that, hey, we are supposed to be different, right? There's the world's normal, and then there's this new normal that God has called us to. If we say that we're following God, then there should be some difference about us. And we've talked a lot of time about what that means and really why are we saying that. And now we've gotten into the action steps. And last week we talked about this whole idea of dying to ourself so that we can live in Christ. So we talked about how missionaries used to pack all their belongings. Back in the day, missionaries used to pack belongings in a wooden coffin. They would make their own coffin, and they would pack their belongings, and they would sail off to South Pacific, to wherever, as a way of signifying that, guess what, I'm going all in, that I'm not turning back. And when I say goodbye to my family, my friends, and my home, I'm not going to see them again. They're that committed, knowing that I'm going to go and I will most likely die on the missions field, going after God and trying to spread his gospel. And we talked about this whole idea that God has called us to die to ourselves so that we can come alive in him, how we can step out of our comfort zone. And we talked this that whole idea in that one blank up in the top left is the fact that courage is greater than comfort. And we're going to dive into that a little bit more tonight about the whole idea that courage is greater than comfort. And how we treat God's calling, we said this, how we treat God's calling is often this whole idea of like dipping our toe in the pool, like on May, when we're just like, whoo, that's so cold, right? And it's like, why do we do that? Because we want to be comfortable. We want to feel comfortable when we step into it. We don't want to be like, oh, it's so cold. Like when Obadiah gets in, he's like, Daddy, just take me out. Right? It's like, oh my gosh, I drove or drug you all the way here, and now you want to go home. I don't want to be here. Right? And so often we do that with our lives, with God's will. Of, okay, I'll just invite my friend. Oh, they said no. Okay. I'll wait till it's a little bit warmer, then I'll go back to talking to them, right? And then this whole idea is God saying, man, I don't call you to be comfortable. I call you to be courageous. We're called to be bold Christians that advance God's gospel boldly. One of those missionaries that did this was called A.W. Moline, however you want to pronounce his name. But he did this, packed up his coffin and sailed off to the South Pacific. And when he did, he was going off to this island that was known for headhunters, which means that these tribal guys kind of, like, they would take your head. And every missionary that had went before him was martyred, every single missionary. But he realized, that's not going to stop me. For some of you, every person that's talked to that other guy or girl has been, like, ridiculed, made fun of, you know, put off in the corner, or just all of a sudden they didn't make it through. And you're like, you know what? I want to live courageously to go after them. And this guy did. And for 35 years, he lived with them. For 35 years, he lived with them. And when he did die, not because they killed him, but when he did die, they actually buried him in their village. And they wrote this on his tombstone. And I love this line. It says, when he came, there was no light. But when he left, there was no darkness. How awesome would that be for our high schools and our middle schools to say, you know, when they came, man, there's no one here that loves Jesus, Donnie. I'm the only one, right? Man, I don't see very many Christians around, but by the time I leave, I wanna say that, man, there is no darkness. What a call. And some of you guys are like, oh, that's not possible. Not in my 4 years or my 3 years or my 1 year left. But how awesome would it be? Because God could do something incredible through us, through you. That when you come, there was no light. But man, when you left, there was no darkness because you decided to live boldly, to live on fire. And last week we talked about, I told you the story of a girl that we knew from Kansas. She grew up in our youth group. She was the worship leader. She went to camp. She was all on fire for God. Then she went to college. She didn't connect with anyone, any church. She thought she could be strong enough to do life on her own. She met a really cute guy. But this guy kind of believed a little bit differently than she did. He was more lackadaisical in his faith and kind of believed some different things. And she has been dating him for, last week, 2 years. I was wrong. It's been about 4 years now. And she'd been dating him and slowly, compromise after compromise. You know, they moved in together and all this stuff, and they've gone too far in some of their physical realm, and she made a lot of poor decisions, and I told you last week, she called me a couple weeks ago and crying, and she realized, you know, the next step is going to be marriage pretty soon, and she realized, Donnie, I don't know if I can do that. We discussed the fact that because of their different beliefs and because of all this stuff, that they're basically going to compromise so much so that neither one of their lives would be passionately pursuing God. In fact, they're going to be mediocre at best. And in fact, she was worried about her kids. I'm not sure if I can even raise the kids in a church or anything. I mean, she's already thinking about kids, which I was like, what? But so she's already going down this path, and she's like, man, I just don't know what to do, Donna. I just don't know what to do. And we talked about the whole idea that, man, we don't want to live mediocre. And I presented the two questions that I ask anyone that's considering a relationship. Not only that, but if you're even not in a relationship, these questions are good to know is are you honoring God? When people look at you, do they see a reflection of the Creator? When they look at your relationship together, do they feel the love of the Father, of a heavenly Father? Do they see that, man, there's something divine about that? And if you're like, oh, I don't think so, or just like any other couple that bickers and makes out in the parking lot and all that stuff, then, you know, you got to reconsider it. Where's the priority? Or the other question is, are we growing closer to God? Are you growing closer in your relationship to God, both individually but also together as a couple? And if you can't really answer that, then the question is, are you really going after God? Is this really the best thing for you? It might be a good thing. The relationship might be a good thing, but is it a God thing? And there's a huge difference. Is it a good thing or a God thing? So to take you back, guess what I got? I got a phone call yesterday, 1 o'clock in the morning, I got a text. 4 o'clock in the morning, text. 7 o'clock in the morning, another text. 9 o'clock in the morning, I got a phone call. Donnie, I broke up with him. In her words, she goes, after realizing it, I can't live a life that's mediocre. And I realized that. And that was what she said. And I was just like, wow. She caught it. She caught that it might be a good relationship, and she loved him. I mean, she loved him with everything, and she saw a future with him. But she goes, I was willing, even after we talked, Donnie, I was willing to live a life of mediocrity, forsaking the call, because she knew she had a call into ministry, and she knew God was going to use her mightily. And she goes, I was willing to forsake all that and forget all that because I loved him, and I knew that he loved me. But I realized it wasn't God's best for either one of us, and I didn't want him to live a life of mediocrity, and I didn't want to live a life of mediocrity. And so she did a very hard thing. She broke out of that comfort zone, and she walked it with courage. And today I even talked to her, and she goes, man, it's hard because they work together, and so they share a same locker at work. I mean, they live together, so now, like, he's, like, kind of still there but leaving, and so it's awkward, right? It's just like, hey, how's it going? She goes, you know what? I talked to him, and she goes, I just feel so good. I feel so good because he completely understands. He realizes that, man, we're going down this path of mediocrity, and it wasn't what God had intended for us. And so it's really cool to hear her talk about that and the whole idea of she's choosing to be holy, set apart, rather than happy, right? So often we choose the comfortable thing because that makes us happy instead of the holy thing that makes us uncomfortable and sets us apart. And so she chose to do that, and I was so excited for her because she decided to go all in for Christ. She decided to go all in and say, you know what, God, I'm not looking back. Because when we start to do that, we start to want to be comfortable, we start to just chase after happiness, we start to chase after how we feel. And we talked about last week about how boredom equals sin. And you're saying, that's ridiculous. There's this philosopher that actually said that boredom is the root of all evil. And that's crazy, Mr. Soren Kierkegaard. That's crazy that you say that. But he said boredom is the root of all sin. And this is why he said that. Because when you say you're bored, basically there's nothing good to do, right? You're bored. There's nothing that's really supposed to be happening. You're just like, there's nothing really good to do. Basically, this moment is meaningless. There's nothing good to do in it. And when you say that this moment is meaningless, you're basically saying that, really, I am meaningless for this moment of life. There's nothing for me to do in this moment of my life, whether it's just waking up and watching TV or whatever it is, or you're lying in bed and you're just like, I'm so bored on a Friday night. You're saying that this moment is meaningless for me to live in, meaning that there's no purpose for you in that moment. And we know that God says, no, I have plans to prosper you. I have a purpose for you, that you are marked with a price, that I have something that I expect out of you. And so when we say that when we say we're bored, that means that we're saying that, God, I don't really believe that you created me for this moment. And life is a vapor. It goes like that. And so often, though, we say, oh, you know, I'm just so bored. And that moment is full of meaningless moments for us. And so God's saying, no, I didn't call you to be bored. I called you to live life full, to live life on purpose. And so often we get so concerned on what we're going to do instead of who we are going to be. We get so concerned with what we're going to do instead of who we're going to be. And here's the thing. The reality is that we've got enough of Jesus to be informed, but not enough to be transformed. We got enough of Jesus to know it with our minds, but we don't have enough of Jesus in our hearts to say, you know what, I believe that I have the courage to do what I can't do on my own, that I have the courage to be bold, to live out loud, to go all in and all out for Jesus. It's like this. It's like we're an ocean wide of knowledge. Yeah, I grew up in the church. I know all the right stuff to do. I know all the right things to say. So you're an ocean wide, but you're only an ankle deep. And God's saying, man, go all in. Go deeper. 1 Timothy 1, verse 7 through 9, in that video talked about it. It says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear of timidity, but of power and love and self-discipline. So never be ashamed to tell others about our Lord. And don't be ashamed of me either. This was Paul writing it. Even though I am in prison for him. With the strength God gives you, be ready to suffer with me for the sake of the good news. For God saved us and called us to live a holy life. He did this not because we deserved it, but because it was his plan from the beginning of time to show us his grace through Christ Jesus. We talked about that opportunity last week, and we mentioned it with the video of El Salvador, and these are opportunities. We even talked about being a campus missionary, starting something, not just saying, you know what, yeah, I'll try to be God's light in my school, but say, no, I want to do something more. I want to be a catalyst for the movement of God to impact my school in a real way. And then we talked about how that would look, you know, whether you start almost an after-school program or before school or meet during lunch and gather students to gather as a force and say, hey, let's be bold in our faith. Let's go after God. Let's see what God can do. Because when we came, the school didn't have a lot of light in it. But when we leave, we want to say that there wasn't much darkness left. And so that's what our call is. And last week we ended with that statement that I love. Don't allow fear to dictate the call of God on your life. The fear of the unknown, the fear of the failure, the fear of the frustration of being ostracized or whatever it might be. Don't allow fear to dictate the call of God on your life, because you might not have all the answers. You might have no idea of the outcome, but the decision that you make to trust God completely can change everything. Can change everything. You're called to greater things and you have no idea the power of everyday decisions. The disciples were mandated, and because they went out and spread the gospel, we are still talking about them thousands of years later, and they had no idea what was going to happen. They had no idea the price that they were going to pay or the impact that they were going to make, but they decided to live boldly, to be courageous. I was reading about how the disciples died, and it was kind of crazy. If you've never read Fox's Book of Martyrs, I encourage you to pick it up. It's crazy about the people that sacrificed everything for us. It says here, James the Greater was thrust through with a sword, and he was the first apostle to be martyred just about 10 to 12 years after Jesus was crucified and then raised. And then Luke was hung by the neck from a tree. Doubting Thomas was pierced through with a pine spear, then tortured with red-hot plates, and then burned alive in India. Philip was tortured and crucified, and while he was being crucified, continued to preach on the cross. Matthew was stabbed in the back. Bartholomew was flogged to death, beaten. James the Just was thrown off the pinnacle of the temple in Jerusalem, really high place, pushed off. After he fell 100 feet and survived, a mob came and beat him with clubs till he died. That's ridiculous. I just survived a 100-foot fall, and now I'm beaten to death with clubs. Simon the Zealot was crucified. Thaddeus was beaten to death with sticks. Matthias, however you want to pronounce it, who replaced Judas Iscariot, was stoned to death. And then after he was stoned to death, His head was cut off, so he was beheaded, just for good measure. Peter was crucified upside down at his own request. Here's the thing. John, the beloved, John was the only disciple to die of natural causes. And that's only because he survived his own execution of boiling hot oil being dumped all over him. And he survived it. And so they exiled him to an island. And so he died there of natural causes. It's like, this is ridiculous. But these guys said, you know what? It's not these big moments. So often we think, when I graduate, man, I'm going to go out and impact the world. I'm going to make this decision with what I'm going to do with my life. But guess what? It's in these tiny decisions leading up to that that really matter. It's in these tiny decisions leading up to all those things that really matter. And your decision to go all in for Christ, no matter how small or no matter how hard, will impact so many other people, will impact generations to come. Decisions happen every day. It's not just when we graduate, but it happens every day. I read this book by Mark Batterson, and he had this story. I like history. That was kind of my major in college, church history and stuff. And he had this story of the Civil War, and I love war history kind of stuff. And so he was talking about there's a battle, Gettysburg, you know, the Battle of Gettysburg. This was like a really big battle, like North versus South, Union versus Confederate. And like the Union won the Battle of Gettysburg. And like they say that turned the tide for that war, that because they won that they actually were able to continue on winning. And all of a sudden they won the war because they won the Battle of Gettysburg. But right before the Battle of Gettysburg, there's another battle, the Battle of Little Round Top. And it was this commander, Joshua Chamberlain, and this guy was a theology student. He was a professor of rhetoric. He lived in Maine, and he was not a soldier. But like everyone else, he kind of got drafted in, volunteered, okay, I can do it. He moved up the ranks. He became a colonel over about 300 men, and they met the Confederate Army at this battlefield. And the Confederates charged, and he held them off with his men. They charged a second time, and he held them off with his men. Charged a third time, held them off. Fourth time, held them off. Fifth time, held them off. And by this time, his sergeant came up to him and said, we only have 80 men, 80 men left. And we only have enough ammo for every man to have one bullet, one shot left. And Chamberlain himself had actually been hit. They say it could have either been a bullet to the belt or a shrapnel that bounced up and hit him. But he was on the ground, and he was hit. And then there was this scout back in the day. It was almost like people would go out for entertainment to watch these battles. It was almost like going to a soccer game. Like you'd sit in a hill far away, and you're like, oh, ole, 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 ole. Oh. All right, so not quite like that. But there's this kid that was in the tree watching, and he was kind of a scout for the Union, and he ran down and said, the Confederates are forming rank, meaning that they're about to charge for a sixth time. And when this happened, and so Chamberlain heard that, and he had a split-second decision to make. He wasn't planning on, when he woke up that morning, oh, man, this is going to be a big decision I have to make today. Like, man, when I graduate, I'm going to make a big decision. No. He was overwhelmed, he was knocked down, and his army was more or less defeated. Any other commander would have retreated or sounded the surrender. And so often, we in our lives say, I tried, Donnie, and I just got knocked down. I tried to talk to my friends, I tried to talk to my family, I'm trying in this relationship, but it's just not working. Just like that girl that I told you about in Kansas, she said, man, it's just not working. I just don't know what to do next. I just don't know what to do. And in this moment, Chamberlain climbed up on this barricade. I love how this book put it, because it says he climbed up on the barricade in view of the enemy. And he said, fix bayonets. And he called the charge. Fix bayonets, this really long sword-like thing that you stick on the end of your gun and you stab people with it. He said, fix bayonets. And he ordered the charge. In view of his enemy, he says, we're not giving up yet. We're not done yet. How many of us have that kind of courage? How many of us can see the spiritual war that's going on in our high schools, in our middle schools, and say, you know what? You might think you have a hold on my friends. You might think you have a hold on my teammates, Satan, but I'm not giving up yet. And guess what? 80 men charged. And they had 4,000 men surrender to them that day. 80 men caused 4,000 Confederates to surrender, and they won that battle. If the Confederates had won that battle, they would have had the high ground going into Gettysburg, into the Battle of Gettysburg, and so they would have, they said that, historians said that they would have most likely won that battle as well, and then if they won Gettysburg, they would have won the war most likely because they will continue to advance, and our nation would be totally different than it is now. But one man, beaten, and everything seems to go against him. I'm not done yet. Commanded the charge. And when asked, 35 or so years later, when asked, man, what was going through your mind? And he said this. He goes, I knew I may die, but I loved this line that he says, I had the inability to do nothing. Meaning, I couldn't do nothing. I had to do something. I had deep within me the inability to do nothing. And that's what's in that little blue circle there. Because I thought that was so key. Do we, as Christians, as God followers, as people that say, yeah, I love Jesus, do we have the inability to do nothing? Are we bold enough to say, God, man, the whole world seems to be against me, but I know that you are for me, and I am yelling the charge. I'm calling it out, and I'm going. The odds are against me. I don't see how this is going to turn out, but I'm going after it. One man's courage saved the day, saved the war, saved the Union. And you might not, it might not be what you envisioned or the way you thought God was going to move, but it's not about what you have, rather about what you do with what you have. Donnie, I don't have a lot of friends. Donnie, I don't have a car. I don't have all this to get people here. I'm not really good with talking to people. I don't really know a lot of people that aren't Christians. I don't really know what to do. And God say, no, you got to be a good steward of what you have. It's not about what you have. I just need more. I need to have a better position and all this stuff. It's about what are you doing with what you have? God's given you gifts and abilities. He's given you a voice. What are you doing with what you have? Because the reality is we can't just do nothing. It might cost us everything, but the alternative is worse. So when are we going to wake up and realize that even indecision, I don't know if I should do this or not, even indecision is a decision. When are we going to wake up and realize that, man, I don't want to live mediocre lives anymore? And I was so proud of that girl to make that move to say, you know what, I'm going to break up with him. And this is the hardest thing that I've ever done. Because she realized that I can't live a mediocre life. When are we going to realize that the church is not a noun, but rather a verb? It's supposed to be an action verb. It's supposed to be something that we go and do. We're supposed to advance God's gospel boldly, with courage, and not hold back. So the question is, what do you need to charge in your life? What addiction do you need to charge? And say, you know what addiction? You might be coming at me, but my God's not done yet. What relationship do you need to charge? And say, you know what? I thought this was going to work out, but man, it's really just causing me to compromise in my relationship. I know this isn't the best thing, and you need to charge at it. What relationship or what situation at home or at your school do you need to say, you know what, God? I know that you are for me and not against me, and I need to charge. What attitude or habit, what lie of Satan do you need to charge at? Do you need to say, you know what? I'm not giving up yet. I'm not done yet. I'm going after it to see what God is going to do. Because I want to live courageously. I want to live boldly. What area of your life do you need to say, God, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm not going to allow fear to dictate your call on my life. John 1 verse 5 says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. I love that line. Some versions say that the light pierces the darkness. Because God is wanting to shine his light through you in your schools, in your families, in your workplaces, with your friends, with your teammates. He is wanting to do something incredible for you. Some of you say, man, I'm surrounded by people that go to church, or I'm surrounded by people that love Jesus. But are they really being passionate? Are they really being courageous after God? Or are they kind of just being mediocre? Because often that's the lie that we can buy into is we just think that we're all doing okay because we all just show up to church. We all sort of believe the same thing, but God's calling us to raise the standard in our life. It's time to act boldly. We got to realize that God goes before us. Just like that one song, even while we were praying, it says, "You make me brave. You call me out beyond the shores into those waves that I have no idea what's going to happen. You make me brave, God." Is God really making us brave? Are we allowing God to make us brave? And so the question is, do you have the inability to do nothing? Do you have the inability to do nothing, saying, "God, I got to do something"? Because that's who God's created us to be. And we don't realize the decisions, the small decisions we make now, how they impact in time to come. Man, what a way to talk about our high schools or middle school. When we came, there wasn't much light, but when we left, there wasn't much darkness because we were bold enough to live courageously.
Thanks again for listening to this message from Reality Student Ministries. Our hope is that you've learned a little bit more of who God is and who He has called you to be. For information on how you can get connected to our student ministry, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com or like our Facebook page at RSM. Now get out there and have an incredible day.